Hi, this is Chris Mandel, director of the Sedgwick Institute. Today we're going to talk in part two of my two-part interview with Courtney Claflin, executive director of captive programs at the University of California. We had such a good conversation that I decided to break it into two parts. So if you haven't heard part one, go back and take a listen, and you'll get, I think, a lot of insights from the great things that Courtney has been doing at UC. And this part two will take it even further into some more detail that I think most captive owners and aspirants will find real useful to the way you think about alternative risk financing for your organization. So here we go. Part two with Courtney Claflin.
Courtney, we were talking about the impact you were having. And the last thing you said was your goal is $100 million a year. That's pretty unbelievable, but good luck on that. How many different captives do you have set up these days?
Right now we have four. We have Fiat Lux Risk and Insurance Company, which I call our big captive, that does most of the traditional lines of cover that an organization like ours has. Mm-hmm. Then we built, in my first year, we built UC Health RRG, which is a reciprocal risk retention group. Mm-hmm. And what we're using that to do is that in our med schools, we train over half the docs in California. Mm-hmm. And they had come knocking at the door saying, hey, can you help us with Med Mouse? So what we did is built a reciprocal risk retention group to provide medical malpractice to physician and physician groups that are affiliated with our medical centers. Mm. So that was our second one. Third one is Eureka Insurance Company, PCC. It's a protected cell captive established in DC. And from that cell captive, we spun off Eureka One, which will do the employee life and disability. Mm-hmm. We're also sponsoring another cell for the California State University system, which mm-hmm. is a sister system to the UC system. They want to do what we're doing, but they don't have the expertise or the horsepower. They don't have the staffing to do that. So what we're doing is introducing them to the captive world, introducing them to captive professionals. I'm providing them the blueprints that I've used to do the things we're doing, and they're going to get their start here on April 1st with their workers' compensation program, and then they'll grow that as they grow. And then we've got plans for a couple of more because we're launching some employee and then faculty staff alumni programs.
What kind of structures will they be?
They'll be cells off of, and these are incorporated, these are all incorporated cells. So they're just like a standalone single parent captive. It's just that the core company, Eureka, allows us to efficiently spin out new captives. So those will all be incorporated cells as well.
So the original, as you call it, big captive is a pure parent-owned captive?
Yes. Yes, it is a single parent, not-for-profit captive.
Mm. Very good. Well, that's an amazing program. So let's just wrap this up with your comments about, you know, the future of, you know, ART or, you know, as it relates to risk strategies. I mean, obviously, you've done probably more than most in the captive world to get you see the benefits you're getting them. Where do you see the captive insurance business going over the next 5 to 10 years? Any place different?
Well, I think I don't know a lot about Europe, but I know with BEPS and BEATS and GDPR, they've got some challenges going on over there. Mm-hmm. From the U.S. side, I think the captive world, of course, we all understand the 831B kerfuffle that we've got. Yeah, with micro captives, I think that it's going to take a while to clean some of that up. You know what? I've built a couple, so built for the right reasons and built the right way. They're a wonderful risk financing mechanism. I think We all know that there's been some problems in that space, and I think that's going to get cleaned up here in the next few years. Mm-hmm. I'm a little, as most people do, a little concerned with the overreach of some states as it pertains to self-procurement taxes and, you know, premium taxes. We've seen with Washington State most recently, how they can become more aggressive, and mm-hmm. and certain states prior to that with essentially telling captives, you either re-domesticate back here or else mm-hmm. we're gonna charge you. That's going back to Dodd-Frank. I think that's an overreach. I would hope that that would get cleared up in Congress. Mm-hmm. But nobody's holding their breath on that with what's going on in Washington, D.C. these days. But from an ART perspective, I think, you know, with more education, with more knowledge, I think, you know, what I love to do is to utilize captives to finance risk more efficiently, to either save money or to generate new money. Mm-hmm. And I would love to see more of this in our industry. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, there's a lot of captives that aren't very public with what they do, so you don't really know what they're doing. But mm-hmm. I've spoken to, you know, Fortune 50s and Fortune 100s that aren't doing much of anything. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the common denominators that I'm finding is that the captives are run by, on a day-to-day basis, by somebody who's got three or four other jobs. Mm-hmm. It's usually the risk manager. And
I know how hard. That is typical.
Yeah, it's difficult. And we have the luxury of having me sitting here thinking and acting 24/7. All I do is captive. And so I've got the time and I've got the support to continue to do what I'm doing. And one of the things that I just wish some organizations would understand is they say, well, we can't. I was talking to a $200 billion company on the phone, and they wanted to hire somebody to do what I'm doing. And I said, well, what have you got in the budget? And they go, like, $75,000.
Mm-hmm.
It's not possible. Mm-hmm. And people say they can't afford it. And I always come back with, you know, I've got a team of five now. We've got multiple captives. We have pretty, you know, it's over $2 million a year that we have in expenses, and we pay for that in less than a month.
Mm-hmm. Does that include all the frictional costs of those facilities?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. And mm-hmm. we pay for it with less than a month's worth of savings or new revenues that we generate. And then everything right. from there is positive. I'd like to continue to pound that drum in the industry is that don't be scared to hire somebody to do this all day, every day, because they'll probably pay for themselves in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I guess, you know, it's, to me, in my experience, it's just more common where, you know, somebody's trying to solve a kind of fairly narrow, you know, insurance issue. Maybe it's something they can't insure elsewhere, or, you know, some other more routine thing. And they don't think more broadly about how can we really leverage the facility, you know, and optimize its use, you know, for all kinds of reasons, including they just don't have the time, to your earlier point. But if they did, you know, these programs would probably be much more sophisticated, much more contributory towards results overall. And I just think it's unfortunate, but, you know, it's to an institution, you know, as to what those circumstances are. But that's been my experience, because I've done them in probably seven different corporate entities over my career. And almost always we were trying to solve one particular problem. In most cases, we went and solved other problems, but never took it to the level you did. You're fortunate to have that kind of latitude. But,
yeah.
You know, you get the payback, right?
Yeah. Well, we've got the ROI. And one of the things that I've has kind of been one of my mantras from even way back when I started was demystifying this. Mm-hmm. You know, I I often make fun of myself. You know, I'm a hockey player and I'm running $1.5 billion organization. Well, you know, I'm not that bright, but you can do this. It's not rocket science. You know,
yeah.
I know rocket scientists. This isn't rocket science. And for us as an industry to kind of demystify it and continue to teach, this is how it looks and tastes and feels. And it's really not as complicated as you think it is. And I think as an industry, you know, I sit on the CECA board. One of the things that I drive is just education, and keep it simple and try to take the mystery out of it.
You know, as I think about it, Courtney, I mean, I've been thinking and writing and talking a lot about disruption in the industry, particularly in the insurance and risk world, for all the different ways in which that happens. And as I think about your comments, it makes me wonder why captives and ART more broadly haven't been more disruptive to the insurance world. And the answer, of course, is because their use has been so limited. But if it wasn't limited and constrained for all the reasons we've discussed and others, it probably would be pretty disruptive to an industry who, in many cases, tends to be fairly inefficient, fairly stodgy, fairly uncreative. And you know, if people were doing across the board what they're capable of, that would even approach the kind of diversity that you're applying to this realm, insurance companies would be hurting, I would think.
Well, yeah, you could make that argument. You know, I heard a great quote one time. And I don't know who to attribute it to, but it was a great quote. It was, captives invent things. The insurance industry commercializes them.
Mm-hmm.
And captives, you know, they were born as a last resort. The commercial insurance market wouldn't respond.
There you go.
Consequently, you had your first captive. Well, captives are we've got some stuff. I do some direct issue policies back to the university for things that were not available or were far too expensive in the commercial market, that I issue the policies directly, and consequently we save a lot of money and we can dictate the terms and conditions of the coverage, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But the entrepreneurialism that you can generate out of a captive just by, you know, popping the top off your head and saying, well, what if?
So to that point, do you have any programs in your captives that cover risks, you know, for the full breadth of the exposure that you don't reinsure, either because you can't or it's not efficient, but you just take all the risk yourself?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we do. We've got, probably 3 or 4 or 5 of them right now.
Mm-hmm.
For stop loss, you know, we've got 100,000 students, or actually more now, on our student health plan. We've got about 275,000 grown-ups on the grown-up plan, and we provided the stop loss for them for a couple of years because we drove 60%+ savings into the students and about 45% savings into the grown-up plan.
Mm-hmm.
And then helped them understand they didn't really, we helped them do the modeling and things. They didn't really need to go out and buy stop loss anymore. So they went to fully bare or fully mm-hmm. self-insured plans.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we do you know, probably half a dozen direct issue contracts that we do not have reinsurance support behind us.
So what do you think about the question of the extent to which in captives or, you know, ARTs more broadly will ever be more commonly applied to what I call the truly unpredictable exposures? Maybe they're not black swans, maybe they're gray swans, maybe they're just things that haven't been part of the entity's experience before, but they're concerned about it. So they put some money in a facility to cover it. I don't think that's very common, mainly because it's not predictable. But, I mean, do you see that changing?
Well, I obviously, you know, just thinking off the top of my head, if you have a risk, let's call it an unpredictable risk,
mm-hmm.
You're insuring it now somehow. you're either insuring it with your balance sheet, meaning if it happens, you're paying for it.
Good point. Or insuring it out of ignorance in some sense.
Yeah. Right. Or you're buying insurance in the commercial marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I take a look at every individual line item, and we've got hundreds of them, and determine, is it better off assuming some of that risk in the captive and then purchasing reinsurance to go behind it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, these unpredictable risks, the other thing is it's like when I go back to the little conversation we had a few minutes ago about cyber, you know, we were, you know, gosh, we might have to take a $20 million retention for cyber instead of five. And I kept saying, I would rather take a finite amount of risk than in with a good reinsurance contract behind me, mm-hmm. than take a smaller finite amount of risk, a $5 million retention with crappy coverage behind it. Mm-hmm. And so when you take a look at an unpredictable risk, you know, you're going to be able to find support for just about any risk you want. The only question is going to be the terms and the retentions.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've already got that risk on your balance sheet and it's that unpredictable and you're not doing anything to cover it other than your balance sheet, it would make complete sense to me. Mm-hmm. to draw up the terms and conditions, utilize your insurance company, utilize your captive to go to those markets that just service insurance companies and say, hey, can you provide excess cover on this? What kind of retentions are you looking at? Mm-hmm. Now that becomes a less unpredictable risk.
Right.
So right. I think that's, to me, one of the founding pillars of a captive is unpredictable risk. Is okay, we've got this risk. What are we going to do with it?
And yet most captives would say the coverage they provide are based on actuarial forecasts of expected losses, right? Not the unpredictable.
Yeah, that's correct. But I've never met an actuary that couldn't put a loss pick on pretty much anything. Just ask them.
Yeah, well, speaking of that, you know, the one thing I haven't heard you say, well, two things I haven't heard you say that kind of are, you know, stick in my head. One is that you haven't talked about doing this for getting more control, which is a common, you know, motivation for setting these things up, you know, taking the control away from insurers and other third parties. Is that one of your motivations, or do you care about that aspect?
No, that's a big motivation, is control. You take a look at claim control. You now own the claims,
right.
And you're now contracted with the TPA,
mm-hmm.
and ultimately you're going to pay the claim anyway, whether it's quote unquote covered or not covered.
Mm-hmm.
So you want your legal team on it. You know, I'm the beneficiary of being in a larger organization. We've got 100 lawyers downstairs, and we use outside legal counsel for trials and things of that nature, but they're always shoulder to shoulder with our own people. So
mm-hmm.
I've got some advantages from a control standpoint that a lot of organizations don't. But yes, control is a big deal. I mean, if you own the claims, that means that you're in a position to be able to manage that claim along the path to reconciliation. The other thing is, too, is that every contract that I issue has a differences and conditions clause in it. In the event something squeaks through the terms and conditions, it may not be covered, quote unquote,
mm-hmm.
but with the DIC, I've got control to be able to pay for it.
Right.
And as a quasi-public entity, it would... there's certain circumstances where it would look pretty silly if I didn't pay this claim, but it's not necessarily covered under insurance,
mm-hmm.
then I've got the control of the DIC in every contract in order to pay that. So
mm-hmm.
controls, yeah, it's big. And go back to something like cyber and what we do with property and what we do with our terrorism. We help craft the policies.
Mm-hmm.
That's control. When we get a pen with the paper to sit down with reinsurers shoulder to shoulder and construct language, because we do have some unique exposures that's control. So control is a big darn deal.
The other thing that I haven't heard you talk about is terrorism. Are you at all using your facilities to access the Treasury TRIA mechanism or whatever they call it these days?
We've bypassed TRIA and gone straight to the private markets, the private reinsurers, but we use the captive to access those, which helps us craft our language a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
It gives us a little bit more robust and frankly, with TRIA, I don't have the time. We have, according to the professionals in my department, which is risk services, we've got 30 days to get our kids back on campus.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't sit around and wait, or we can't sit around and wait for three separate bodies in the federal government to give it a stamp of approval.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why we've kind of opted for the private side of the terrorism world.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously you take a look at our sports stadiums, you take a look at our universities, we're a target. You take a look at our med centers. You take a look at the research that we're conducting across our university system, and biological agents could escape.
That's right.
We could cause damage. So it's important for us to be able to be nimble in that regard.
So you can get NBCR coverage out of the reinsurance market these days?
Yes. Yep.
Hmm. Interesting. All right. Well, listen, I think we've got enough here for two segments. I'm going to post this in terms of part one and part two. And if you have nothing else you want to say, I think we'll go ahead and close it out. I want to thank you for your time and your insights.
I
want to thank you for being
welcome.
A Sedgwick client as well. Should never forget that.
Yep, that's absolutely right. Every dollar of every claim comes through your organization. And again, I'm sorry to be long-winded. You get me wound up on captives. I could go all day, so I apologize to the audience and to you as well.
I understand. All right, well, so to my listeners, you can find my speaking and writing schedule as well as other resources at CedricInstitute.com, as well as that of the Cedric Senior Fellow Bill Zachary and Dr. Rick Victor. Please consider joining the Institute's LinkedIn group titled Cedric Institute, where we dialogue daily on issues of importance to various stakeholders in our world. Till next month, when we will have our next installment of this forum with another key leader in the insurance industry, I urge you to use your expertise and influence to make a difference whenever and wherever you can to make our industry better. Thanks again, Courtney.
You're very welcome. Thank you.